This podcast is sponsored by Athletic Greens. Now, I'm sure you've heard of Athletic Greens from a thousand different other podcasts, but the reason why I think this is the case is because it works. I've been using it for years, and the biggest benefits that I've realized is that it gives me more energy. I feel like I'm getting a full and healthy diet. My poops are better, and I'm sorry to say, but it's true. And so if you're somebody who really wants a healthy diet where they're confident they're getting all their micronutrients, go on and head over to drinkag1.com/Farzad. drinkag1.com/Farzad, where you'll get a free vitamin D plus K2 bottle and 5 free travel packs. Thank you so much to Athletic Greens. And now onto the podcast. So here's the deal. Like it was Hans's idea to reach out and have you on, because right around the sort of XAI Tesla conversation started happening with Elon, you know, putting a poll out there on X, which in the past has been a way to just maybe send a signal that says, hey, I've already made up my mind, but let me put a poll out there anyway so that I can get the yes and then do it anyway thing, you know?
Well, there's been a lot of chatter on X, you know, urging this from people who have been unable to invest in it. So I think that this was his, you know, he gave it some thought, I think, and this is his response.
So how are you reading that then? Like, so because one of the, you know, I remember this sort of this loose conversation around purchasing or putting everything under an X umbrella came up years ago. But this is sort of maybe slightly different, actually very different, because this is more about Tesla taking an investment on XAI, with XAI being really purely an AI play. You know, it's a company that's focusing strictly on AGI, and with Tesla becoming increasingly more and more an AI company with most of its revenues and profits, you know, if they are correct in how they're thinking about the company become a larger percentage of their total business, then this investment could make sense. But help me, like, walk me through how you're thinking about this, because, you know, I've sort of, you know, the thing that I hear on the opposite side is, hey, this might be a conflict of interest. This is going to create a lot of issues from a talent perspective. So help me understand how you're framing it, and then we'll turn it into a conversation.
Well, we have to take a step back and take a broader look at why Elon started XAI and why he didn't put it into Tesla in the first place, because that was an option. He has a very large 200-plus person AI team, which, by the way, is quite remarkable that he's doing with 200 people what Meta is doing with many, many thousands of people. Now, Meta's got a different objective, and they're perhaps looking broader, although I don't know that their challenge is anything like the challenge of FSD. But nonetheless, he's doing with 200 people what the average firm that's not, drag Meta into this, but the average firm would do with 2,000. But you must remember, he started OpenAI outside of Tesla many, many years ago, 8 years ago, maybe. I may be wrong. I can't remember. So there was always the thought that general AI or AGI was something that is not within the Tesla remit. And I'm going to expand on that. But in general terms, this is nothing new. He started OpenAI with the very purpose of developing AGI and developing it in a way that is open to the world. OpenAI took a different path. And Tesla and, you know, Elon's been unhappy about that. He's been quite open about it. In fact, he launched a court case around that issue, that very issue. But nonetheless, it has not been out of his long-term goal, and it hasn't been outside of his real concern about what happens when AGI happens if it's in the control of some entity that may not be, that may not have public interest at heart. So when OpenAI broke out with ChatGPT And generative models became clearly as powerful as, you know, reaching towards AGI. I think that he reconsidered restarting OpenAI with its original goals. And I think that was the genesis of what XAI became. But of course, it's a lot more complicated at this point because he has X. And X is a very important factor in the birth of XAI. Why? Because X has something that nobody else has got, and that's unique data. X has got this trove of data going back years and very large about people's thoughts and people's exchanges with one another. Now, I wrote a paper some time ago, maybe 3-4 months ago. You know, 3 months in this field could be 30 years. But I wrote a paper that I thought LLMs or generative AI models would become commodities, and that the value did not lie in the code of generative AI, just as the value in many of these massive breakthroughs doesn't lie in the code. It doesn't lie in the code of a browser, or it doesn't lie in the code of an internet server, you know, notwithstanding the Netscape excitement and all that of the web years, of the early web years. But it lies in the data. It lies in the content. And I posited that companies that had unique content and large scale unique content that is of value would be the winners. And they would create walled gardens of extreme value. And that's exactly what the X opportunity was and is. Not only because of the long history or the long tail of X data, but more particularly because of what is coming in X, and that is, you know, the everything app, payments, retail sales. I think it's going to be an Amazon competition. And then, you know, just a wide swath of activities that, you know, hundreds of millions of people can bring. In particular, there's video, there's, you know, there's public events, there's private events, and there's all the chatter, of course. And so he foresaw that X required its own generative AI, which he could have bought. He could have bought the code for that. But then he also saw the opportunity to drive towards AGI. So it made all the sense in the world to start his new ape, let's call it OpenAI 2, which became XAI, and include X into the mix because he wanted to use the X data. How does this intersect with Tesla? It doesn't really intersect with Tesla, except there's a lot of value for Tesla in a generative model. Think about the use in the car, having a generative model in the car that you can chat with and that can answer your questions and can talk about your destinations and can offer you guidance and a whole lot more. I mean, I'm just giving you some examples. Think of the value of XAI to SpaceX. Of a generative model to SpaceX. And think of the enormous value of a generative model to Neuralink. You know, having a generative model plugged directly into your brain is dramatically higher bandwidth than having a generative model you have to key in or read. So there was apparently an intersect for XAI with these other companies, but nothing like the direct connect with X. So X helped spawn XAI with money, with value, that is to say, provision of data, and got a piece of the action. And he raised money from private sources, which is his want. This is how he builds companies. And he didn't raise it from Tesla. Because he saw the conflict, he saw the complexity of bringing a public company in which he only owns, you know, holds less than 20% now, into this private company, and the conflicts. And the other reason he made very clear, he made manifest, he said, look, I can't hire people in Tesla to do generative AI because we're doing, you know, a very specific task. We have our eye on the prize. We're driving towards the prize. People I bring in don't want a piece of Tesla. They want a piece of generative AI, of what is coming. They're not interested in Tesla. He actually tried to hire, apparently, people and got this kind of pushback. Look, I don't want a part of Tesla. Tesla makes cars. It makes robots. All the very nice stuff, but I'm interested in AI. And, you know, right now, AI resources are king and queen. They can't be hired at any terms but their own. And he's spoken about that. So on balance, he decided to start his new OpenAI as he did the last OpenAI completely independently, but this time with xAI in the mix because it was the source of his, you know, edge. And his edge is this walled garden of all this data and the future opportunities in a much wider arena. So that's the reason, that was the antecedent as to why xAI started outside of Tesla. But there are compelling reasons why Tesla should have an interest in xAI. And there are compelling reasons why Tesla shouldn't own xAI. Some of them I've given you already, but others are Tesla's got a full plate. It has a very full plate. It has $30 billion in cash, and we all think that's a huge amount of cash, right? But actually, it's spoken for. Every dollar of Tesla's assets, cash assets, are already budgeted, and I posited that actually there's not enough cash. I think it needs more cash than it's got. Fortunately, it generates cash every quarter, not as much as you budgeted, Farzad, but quite a lot. And it's going to continue generating that cash. Plus, we're entering a period of recession. We've had this kind of rolling recession, and we're about to enter into a potential recession. That's Elon's view. It's my view. And so you need every penny of that cash you've got because you committed to this $28 billion program that you already announced. I think it's going to be closer to $40 billion. And you've only got $30 billion in the bank, and you have to run a business. So there's no spare cash to put into generative AI. And how much cash would generative AI need? How much would xAI really need? I think it's in the tens of billions of dollars. So they've already raised $6 billion. I think they're going to have to raise another $10 billion, maybe more. Really, could Tesla take on such a load when it has Optimus, it has the energy business, it has its car business, and its car business has enormous plans. I mean, you know, they talked about opening a new book. I looked at those plans and could not figure out how they're going to squeeze all of that into $30 billion. But for all those reasons, he started X out of Tesla. And for all those, and for those reasons, it wasn't really the right fit to start it within Tesla. And in any case, Tesla did not have the capital. So that sums up, that kind of is the background to my whole thesis of why I supported A, that xAI be started outside of X, but I can make a really good case for B, why Tesla should make an investment into X and why it makes a lot of sense. So that's kind of the summary.
Okay. So that that really helps sort of frame how to think about it. As you were saying that, I mean, could there also be, and I mean, I guess you kind of hit this as well, sort of for the short to medium term, but if you're thinking about the needs for artificial intelligence platforms or artificial intelligence projects, what do you need primarily? Training compute and inference compute, right? So is an investment from Tesla into XAI, especially with the news out of Elon saying that, you know, Grok 3 by the end of this year is going to have the largest or the most capable, you know, based on Elon's guidance, most capable, largest, most powerful AI tool in the world, right? Is that, you know, Tesla investing in XAI from that perspective, does that also open up the possibility for Tesla to leverage compute outside of their company as well? Could that be another play? Is like, maybe it's like, hey, we need to invest in companies where we can tap into their compute, or is that not even part of the equation? I don't think it's
part of the equation, honestly.
Okay.
Because I think that the plan right now for XAI is to use all of the compute they've ordered and then some. So right now we don't know the limits of the scope of generative AI. We don't know the limits. We don't understand the relationship between increase in compute and increase in intelligence. We know that the larger the model, the more the compute. And that the more the compute for a given size of model, the more intelligent the model becomes. So you're looking at kind of a multiplier. Hence the X. You're looking at a multiplier in terms of power that you need. You know, when you look at Tesla full self-driving, when you look at robotaxi, there is a limited scope of what you're trying to achieve. It's a gigantic scope, but it's limited. It's limited to that car driving in the real world. Now, that's a massive scope. But that's the limitation. And I think they're beginning to develop a sense of how much compute they need to achieve, you know, what degree of fidelity in terms of driving. They're beginning to reach that sense, is my sense of it. But when we go to generative AI for AGI, when we're looking at the whole world, as opposed to this real world, you know, look, when we come to the bot, that's a whole nother world, because that dramatically increases scope. But when we look at AGI, we don't know how big we want to make it, but we know we want to make it everything. We know we want to make it as good as the brain, as the human brain, and better. And so all we know is bigger is better. And we haven't understood yet the limits on that. So it's an experiment. You don't want to run an experiment in a public company. You really don't, because nobody will know how to value it. Look, they're struggling to value robotaxi. They're struggling to value. They're not even bothering to value the bot. How would they value something that the price of which you don't even understand? The price of FSD, the car drives itself. The price of the bot does everything you tell it to do and can, you know, can figure out how to do it. But the price for AGI, I mean, it's like, we don't know. So at least in Tesla, we can understand what we need to know. For XAI, we don't know what we don't know at all. We're driving into, you know, the unknown future.
But isn't that one of the biggest sort of reasons why somebody would be against that investment? Because as you sort of outlined, Tesla's cash and everything they have at their, like everything they have on hand is already allocated and potentially short, right? So why would they risk that those plans even further by taking a chunk of that and putting it into something that people don't even understand yet? So
brilliant question. And that is the question. The question is this a bet that Tesla at its in its current state should make? Everybody is going to have an opinion on that, and we're going to vote on that. You know, Elon saw right away that this would, you know, he couldn't do this without a shareholder vote, even though it's not clear that a shareholder vote would be necessary. In fact, strictly under the law, I don't think it is necessary. I'm not a lawyer, so let me just say that it's just an opinion. But the prize is very large. The bet is relatively limited to 5 million. We know that Tesla could go to market tomorrow at $200 a share and raise $10 billion just like immediately.
Like nothing, yeah.
Like nothing. So the 5 billion, it's just small enough that we could do it without really imperiling our plans in Tesla. At this point, you know, things may change. If the market really goes down, if we really hit the recession in full bloom, which I think we're going to anyway, we may want to change our mind and we may not go for it right now. And in any case, that would bring a lot of people paring down their bets on AI. But I think it's a fair bet because it's going to be extremely useful to have a generative AI built into the bot, built into the car. You know, I think it has huge value even in the energy business. So there's a lot of value in building this AI and using it in Tesla. And I think it's worth taking that piece, that $5 billion piece, and making a bet with it. Other people may differ from me, and I think it's a fair difference. And, you know, we'll vote and we'll find out who wants what. I mean, actually, Elon hasn't given a preference on it.
Yeah, and it's, I still feel like it's kind of, and I'll throw it to you here, Hans, in a second. I still feel like it's kind of like cloudy how Elon himself is thinking about this, right? Like I think that's the big missing piece here is like, it's sort of like, yeah, no, we should invest, you know, I'll talk to the board. That's a, you know, good idea. Let's see what we can do. But it's like, it's still like, okay, but it's unclear what, you know, because for the layman like myself, that's trying to understand this as much as possible. A generative AI model definitely in theory makes sense because you're adding sort of, if you have AGI, why wouldn't you use it everywhere? It's like, that's just the question. If you have AGI, why wouldn't you use it everywhere, right? But then the question becomes, okay, but I thought that's what Tesla was sort of trying to work towards with their compute, but they're not really, right? Based on sort of how you're thinking about this, it's a lot more narrow. It's a lot more around drive, like taking in vision and then extrapolating some sort of actions. And then the X piece, the XAI piece, it sounds like it's more about generally understanding the world and humans. And then maybe the combination of those two things is what gives birth to some beautiful product beautiful service or whatever you want to call it in the next 10 to 20 years. Where that initial $5 billion investment, let's say, goes through today, becomes a $1 trillion payoff in 10, 20 years because of how profound this technology is and how profound the combination of that technology with what Tesla's working on right now becomes. It's hard to conceptualize and visualize that because we, like to your point, like we don't even know what it looks. We don't even know what it is. We don't know what it is.
You know, what Tesla is driving towards with the car and even what it's driving towards with the robot is very clearly defined. We understand it. I think we understand it. I think he understands it for sure, but I hope we understand it. I think we understand. What AGI is it's going to be emergent. It's going to be something that becomes manifest to us by what it becomes. You know, and so, yeah, having that in XAI and having Tesla doing its stuff sounds like a, a marvelous marriage of two minds. And if we had, look, if we had $70 billion in the bank today, I would say put it into Tesla and make a special deal for your resources that they get a share of that or something.
Into XAI, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. XAI, put it into Tesla. But absent $70 billion, I wouldn't risk more than $5 billion because we have our hands full.
Yeah, I was just going to riff there a little bit and think about, you know, Andre Karpathy, the way that he got connected with Tesla and Elon originally was that he worked at OpenAI while Elon was still contributing a lot of the financing there. And he has talked openly about the fact that they were, you know, basically doing some consulting work for Tesla. And that was his in to get interested in the problems that Tesla was working on. And then Elon was able to eventually hire him into the company to work on that instead of, and I guess maybe this will tie back into your point about the talent, Larry, that even so Andre, when Andre is interested in the embodied self-driving problem, where does he go to work? He goes to work at Tesla, but he has never worked at Tesla to work on any of the disembodied AGI projects that he's ever been involved in, which have been several. And he's always done that either at OpenAI or independently on his own. And so, you know, you can even see that dichotomy with inside of one employee, what he is and is not willing to work on for Tesla versus outside of Tesla. But that is a great thought to, I think, for Tesla shareholders to remember that there probably will be crossover not only between products, but talent and mind share and inspiration between some of these leading AI researchers and what they're working on, as there is, you know, an intermarriage of a more generative AI type product and whatever, in whatever way that connects to the products and services that Tesla's working on, that he'll be able to tie those in. But on that note, I did want to ask one of the other big questions that's kind of hanging out there in the air and all of this is, okay, why invest all this money and do this for at the end of the day, something that we could probably use for free from Meta in the form of a, you know, today Llama 3.1 405B, in the future something that is potentially more advanced than that? Why not just use what the open source community is already making available to everyone?
Firstly, it's not open source and not open. So what Llama are sharing are the weights. They're not sharing the model. So how they get there is their business. What you get is, you know, the value of the weights. Okay, that's not bad. But that's hardly the technology. Secondly, Tesla, Elon, XAI, X will never put themselves into a dependency mode, particularly with a company like Meta or Microsoft or Apple. I mean, I talked about the value of the value accruing to the walled garden of data. And that's only partly true. You know, the generative model really is in many respects driven by the underlying data on which it's trained. Not 100% anymore. It used to be absolute in the truth, but not 100% anymore. So even if they used Meta's model as a start, they would want to generate their own model, extending the Meta model onto their own data, because they wouldn't want Meta to use their data. So it's, as I said at the outset, the value is not going to be in the model. The value is going to be in the stack. And the stack is going to evolve based upon the underlying data and the purpose of the stack. So to put yourself into the hands of a major vendor, into the hands of a vendor who is a major player on such an important component of your stack, I mean, if you were a software company, you would never, ever do that. I mean, never, ever do that. Because this business, and people talk nice, people talk about open this and open that, people are very nice to each other, but it is cutthroat. It is deadly, deadly war games. And people get shot through the head all the time on these very issues.
I do want to ask one question that's going to take us on a little bit of a rabbit trail, and then I'll let you guys bring us back. And the reason that I'm asking it is because it's a question that has been itching in the back of my brain that I don't feel like I have a solid answer to. And so I'd love y'all's feedback on it. If Elon started this project originally with OpenAI as a nonprofit company, and now XAI is being started as a for-profit company, why would he...
We have a for-profit.
Well, I guess that's true. We don't particularly know. So why the shift in strategy? Is that a tacit agreement with Sam that OpenAI was a non-viable structure, an entity as it existed? And, you know, what do you make of that kind of surface level contradiction?
That's a great question. That's a great question. If Elon had $50 million in the bank that everybody seems to imagine him to have, I believe he may have started this as an open source, open company. But Elon is cash strapped. You know, X is not generating cash. X is consuming cash. X has got very heavy debts. Tesla is not throwing off huge amounts of cash at this point. All the cash it's accruing right now, it's committed to. SpaceX is still raising money. Neuralink is still raising money. Boring company is still raising money. I mean, Elon's companies are all in the building.
He's like the most all-in investor in the history of investors. Like hundreds of billions of dollars all in future investments.
Yeah. So when you're talking about a startup that is going to consume tens of billions to the hundreds of billions of dollars, I don't know if we're going to get to 100 billion, but or hundreds of billions, but certainly tens of billions. When you're talking about a startup that's consuming tens of billions of dollars, you need very, very deep pockets. You're not going to get that level of investment in a not-for-profit. You know, Elon's original investment in OpenAI was less than $50 million. So just the scale of what is needed to achieve AGI is so massive that it's not possible to do in a non-profit vein. And XAI is already a for-profit, sorry, X is already a for-profit company, and that relationship, you know, because X took a 25% upfront piece of XAI.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Sam Altman the one who approached Elon in starting an open source, like an open AI company?
I have no idea. The way Elon tells it, this is an idea that was generated from the conversations he had around AI and the dangers of AI and the lack of interest in dangers of AI with the folks from Google. And so he saw this as an anti-Google. And he said that's why he started it. Now, if Sam said he spoke to Elon first or Elon spoke to Sam first, it matters not. What motivated Elon to get into this business and to start this company was his fear of the abuse of AI or the lack of control of AI, not so much the abuse, but the lack of control of AI and what it may lead to by way of abuse.
Yeah, that's fair. So then with that said, and given that Elon already tried to acquire OpenAI through Tesla, if the emails that were leaked from OpenAI were correct on that blog post that they had, where they're like, hey, you know, Elon proposed that Tesla's going to take ownership, or he wants total ownership because he was afraid that there wasn't going to be enough money coming in because they're not for profit. They're open and a nonprofit. And when you have a nonprofit, it's a lot harder to raise capital or to really get the necessary resources to do it, right? So to me, it's like, obviously XAI will be for profit. Very obviously XAI is going to be for profit. Hans, what the hell was your original question? I know what I wanted to go, but I forget what you asked.
Well, I mean, I guess the thing that we're driving towards ultimately is, you know, what was the fundamental problem that Elon was trying to solve with OpenAI, and does XAI really pose a viable solution to that? Because they're, you know, somewhat different approaches from one another.
I mean, to me, the only approach is for profit. It's obvious. Like, you're not going to be able to raise enough, you know, right or wrong. And honestly, that's where my concerns arise from, because it's becoming clearly painfully obvious that AGI will be a for-profit business. Like, it will be created within the shell of a for-profit corporation. I'm not really sure who's going to be first. My money is on Elon, because, you know, Elon tends to win in the industries that he plays in. But whoever wins, that's going to be completed within a for-profit business. I think it's impossible to reach that unless compute is so like commoditized, like the LLMs are going to become, which I highly doubt that's ever going to happen.
Yeah. How's that? It's not compute. It's energy.
Sure.
I mean, the cost of the compute compared to the amount of the value of the energy consumed over time is relatively low. So the energy costs are just gigantic, and the cost of building those energy requirements are fairly large. So I think that, you know, it's one thing to buy the $5 billion or $10 billion worth of chips. It's a whole nother thing to keep them running.
The cash flow for the energy is going to be way more important.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, it's going to be a very, very, very long slog to get to AGI, is my judgment. I mean, I know a lot of people think, oh, it's just across the... It's not. There's a long way to travel.
So one other quick question based on a comment that Elon was making at the X Takeover about the difficulty of supplying power to these large data centers when they are operating and they're doing a training run, and you've got basically perfect synchronization across an insane number of unique chips, and they're pulling power. And so then when they're all power spiking together, and then when they're all drawing down, then they're all drawing down together. And so you can have these massive fluctuations in power demand that are, you know, almost instantaneous and on the order of, you know, hundreds of milliseconds. Apparently they have solved this problem, or at least to a degree. Do you think that the megapacks are like an incredibly important piece of whatever it is that is the energy stack that underlies that solution? Or what do you think the solution to that problem from a power standpoint looks like?
I'm not an engineer. I have some instincts about it, but they're not really that trustworthy. I haven't seen any chatter about the difficulty of maintaining power. I don't think that the instantaneous power demands are, you know, that difficult a problem to solve in electrical engineering. My sense is that if they would have been, then we would have heard a lot more about it. I mean, batteries are very valuable to maintain frequency when you have frequency variation and fluctuation. But My understanding is that many of these data centers now have their own power supplies. They run, you know, turbines, and then and a large reason for the running of gas turbines to supply power is to separate them from the grid, not from a technical point of view, but from a regulatory point of view. It takes years and years and years to get regulatory approval, not regulatory approval, but to get approval to connect to the grid. And that has to do with the politics of the grid ownership. Grids are owned by the electrical, by organizations formed by the electrical suppliers, the energy suppliers within a given geography. And that geography is state run, and then it goes to a regional, and then it goes to a national basis. So there's this bureaucracy, and the bureaucracy is incredibly incestuous, and it's a real problem. In fact, there are generally 3 to 4 times some multiplier, and my memory serves me. I'm at the age where it doesn't do that well, but many times more applications are made than are finally ever built. And why? Because that 3 to 5 year cycle, it used to be 2 years, it became 3 years, now it's closer to 5 years, cycle of getting interconnects approved in the grid is just too long for many projects to actually get to done or get to start. So the answer, Hans, is I don't think the problem is as much in the energy management within the environment, even despite the very taxing requirements, as it is in just getting the supply to the place where you want to build your data center.
But what's fascinating about that topic is that Even if energy becomes the limiting factor, shout out Jordan, in long term build out and sort of keeping these things solvent, like let's say the energy needs are going to be so huge, which means that they're going to be extremely expensive, unless we have a way to really bring down the cost of energy, right? It's like, it's so weird to just think about. It's like, hey, the guy that's also like working on this also has a thing to, you know, try to alleviate that other side of it through renewable energy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's going to be a small percentage, but it's going to help.
Yeah. Well, so they've done the numbers and they figured out that, you know, the AI demands on energy, they say, are going to be no more than 3 to 4% of the grid, which is a gigantic number, actually. But it sounds like it can be absorbed. I think the number is 3%. It may have been 0.3%, but it's a number that can be absorbed relatively easily. The problem of the grid is really underlying a huge proportion of the problems we face in energy in general, whether it's an issue of renewables or issue of just reliable supply. It's a grid issue, and the grid issue is both as to the generation of it, but more particularly the regulation or the bureaucracy of it and the technology of the grid itself. So that's a problem. That's for another conversation. So it's not really a limiting factor here, I don't think.
And what's interesting about that conversation, right, because if we tie back to sort of where we started, which is Tesla investing in XAI, right? So we're walking through all these complexities of trying to get this thing done, right? It's not just like a code thing. It's not just like a training compute thing or an engineering thing. It's an energy thing. It's you're probably going to have to navigate through governments and regulation, right? And depending where you're throwing these things up, I'm assuming the requirements of this, you know, is XAI going to be like a US only thing, or is it going to be a global thing? Is Elon going to be able to do XAI in China? Doubt it. Although they did approve FSD, right? So it's like there's a lot of different complexities that apply to this. And it's like, okay, cool. So given that the challenge is extremely difficult, But the payoff, but the payoff, especially for the first winner, and this is like the crazy thing about this, right? The first one that reaches the solution, very likely, I mean, I would love to hear your thoughts, very likely would just win, right? Because if you reach AGI first, all of a sudden you have a flywheel that will begin and will never end. It will just keep going. And the second you hit that, it's like you go, you know, hockey stick, and it's like, goodbye, everybody. So the first player that reaches that level wins first, right? So it's like everything is like, everything's being staked for that first player to reach AGI and reaching the ability to not only reach, like, solve it, but keep it running through all the energy needs, so on and so forth. So it's almost like Elon's trying to gather as much resources as humanly possible to be able to do that in any way, which way he can. And I'm wondering if that's really truly at the core of this Tesla investing in XAI thing. It's just like he just needs to be able to raise capital or to have access to capital in any which way so that he wins, because he thinks that if he wins, everybody wins, because he doesn't trust anybody else. And we can debate if that's right or wrong, but
right, there are a lot of things to unstring there. A lot of things to unstring.
You're welcome. Welcome.
Not one. But I do want to say that I don't think it's going to be the winner takes all here. I'm fairly certain it's not going to be winner takes all. And the reason I'm fairly certain is because I don't think there's one way to get to AGI, and I don't think there's one thing that is AGI. I mean, every one of us has AGI. Doesn't make us equal and doesn't make there one winner. I mean, if you discount Elon.
I don't know.
There are many.
Way to contradict yourself.
There are many winners. There isn't one winner. And so there isn't one AGI, and there isn't going to be one type of AGI. There's going to be many, because if you think of AGI, you must think about very different specializations amongst different groups of people or different nations of people. You must think about different specializations within nations, and then different specializations between people. So there's enough space within this thing called AGI that there could be multiple winners. And generally in technology, the history has been there have been multiple winners. If we're talking about physics, in general, there's, you know, one theory of physics which is current and which is accepted, and it evolves over time very slowly. But when we're talking about general intelligence, there are 8-9 billion of us that each have a kind of unique general intelligence. So I think my personal view is there isn't going to be one AGI. Now, the second issue is Elon's just trying to raise as much money as he can to build, you know, to get there first. Let me tell you a little secret, Farzad. Elon can raise as much money as he wishes to raise, with or without Tesla. I mean, he only has to say, I think I'll raise money, and there they just come. And I've experienced it. So this is just reality. Now, things could change, could turn on a dime. I mean, we could be running into a recession where suddenly money becomes king. And we've moved from a point where money has been worthless to now money has some value. Money could become king again. I've lived in those days. And when we get to that point, maybe even Elon can't raise that amount of money. But I think at this point, Elon is considering Tesla's investment because there are some compelling arguments, and I've tried to make them earlier, for Tesla to invest in XAI.
So another parallel question to dive into here is, if we've got, you know, OpenAI and their advancement towards this AGI goal, and then we've got Google and Gemini, and now we've got some other players in the Anthropics of the world, and You know, you can go down a list. Meta's obviously got their hat in the ring in this area as well. How important is it for Elon to have an effort on this front in order to maintain the dynamic stability of this competitive landscape and really to ultimately hopefully preserve a positive future for humanity as we make this next transition into, you know, a world where the amount of artificial intelligence is slowly growing in proportion to the amount of human intelligence and eventually will surpass the amount of human intelligence?
That's such a great question, Hans. I think it harks back to my earlier point about all generative AI is not alike, and that everyone has a different approach and a different direction. And I don't think there's going to be one winner. I think there's going to be a winner in a particular direction, in a particular domain. And I think there are going to be multiple winners in these multiple domains, and they don't necessarily fuse and they don't necessarily link. And they sometimes compete and sometimes they support each other. That would be my guess. Again, the LLM, the model itself, is not the end of the world. It's the beginning of the world. What you do with that model and what that means is the applications or the functional capabilities that you build onto those models and help feed back into those models are going to be the key. I think that it is that's my view of the world, and that's the reason why Elon building, you know, Grok or XAI and XAI building Grok is going to be important, because he is one of the greatest product managers that the world has ever seen. There's no doubt that of his many skills and capabilities, product management, putting into a box the ability to imagine a product that nobody's thought of before, but becomes absolutely, you can't live without it, and it's the greatest thing since life. That's the ultimate product manager, and I think he's the ultimate product manager. The other thing about his product management, which is brilliant, is that he always thinks about the value add and the cost. You know, he is so cost conscious, it's extraordinary. And you know, that comes from the wars that he's been in. And so having this level of product management, heading a company, doing, you know, driving towards AGI is such a great boon. So if he hadn't have started the company, I would have wanted him to start the company because of that skill set.
He's a civilization accelerant.
You know? Civilization accelerant. I mean, he's been called a lot of names, some of them not quite as good as that name.
Civilization destroyer.
I mean, you know, he can't get out of his own way. He's a lovely guy. He's a wonderful guy, but he just can't get out of his own way.
Okay, let's hit Tesla China insurance real quick before we let you go. So for those that are not following the story, just yesterday, Tom Zhu was named the CEO, I believe is the official title of Tesla Insurance in China. And I think this is a much bigger deal than just, hey, look, insurance company in China. I think this has robotaxi implications. How are you guys thinking about this? We'll start with Larry. Where's your head at with this?
Well, it's a very important move. I mean, it's a move that says, yep, we have to self-insure. Robotaxi is going to require self-insurance. It's going to require that they take risk and that they re-underwrite that risk with a broad swath of insurance companies, and that they take a certain amount of risk. I think that's true of robotaxi everywhere, and I think China's just being treated as another market, a normal market, not an abnormal market, the way General Motors worked and the way all the other foreign automakers worked. And so that makes a whole lot of sense. I think it's a great move. I think it's a very positive sign, very positive sign. So I think we're going to – I think the robotaxi march in China is going to be as quick, as fast as it is in the United States.
Do you think it could actually go faster? And I'll give a little context into why I'm asking the question. You know, one of the big reasons why I feel like we're in this era of stagnation that has created, I think, a lot of the turmoil that we feel at this point in time is because we have regulated ourselves out of the ability to innovate. And that really has set in here in the United States. And one of the points that Michael Dunn made to us when he appeared on the podcast a few weeks ago was that, you know, there's a fundamental difference in the mission of the regulator in China with respect to objectives that the CCP views as strategic, which would be electric vehicles. It's going to be self-driving technology, that the regulator is there to come behind the companies and say, how can we make this move faster? How can we make sure that we achieve these objectives as quickly as possible instead of what we have here in the West in general, you know, especially if you look at an environment like Europe, but even also here in the United States where the regulators are there to, okay, let's slow down. Let's maybe not do those things. Maybe let's allow whoever it is that doesn't want you to succeed because they stand to lose money to have too much of a say in whether or not you get to do this thing. With that backdrop and the fact that FSD is a strategically important objective for the CCP, does that potentially become the place where Tesla has basically the handcuffs off and they're allowed to move forward and do things that they would not be allowed to do in any other environment?
That's a brilliant observation. I'm aligned with what you said. I think there's every chance that they move faster in China, not just for that reason, but that reason is a very big component of why they could move faster. You know, China's strange. China's got a much, much stronger regulatory, has much stronger regulatory power than the federal government has in the United States, but it uses it very, very judiciously. Here we use it very injudiciously. We hand power down to, you know, bureaucrats, and bureaucrats tend to accumulate that power and use it in a very divisive or very, I think, thoughtless way.
Arbitrary.
Yeah. In China, they, you know, what they do is they say, what's best for China? The hell with the people. What's best for China? And do what's best for China. And they're very pragmatic about that. So it's good and it's bad. But to your point, I think they could well use China as the proof point for broad use of FSD. And that's it. And what are we going to do about it? It's so weird what we've done with the bureaucratic state. And here I go, you know, becoming political again.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, it's just crazy. It's just, it's weird. You know, we make laws that live forever and we just keep making them and they just keep building and building and building. And nobody knows what the law is. Nobody knows what the law is. You know, it's been proven, you know, with these political prosecutions we're getting political prosecutions using, you know, laws that were passed for financial regulation. Anyway, Hans, you're right. It's more than possible. This is the sign that we're moving towards FSD in China faster than we'll move here in the United States.
Yeah. And it is just so, it is such a, I think that's another thing, like, to put in, you know, Elon's cap is that his ability to just work with the Chinese government, you know, and I know people will say, you know, I've read texts that's a bad thing because, you know, you're empowering an adversary, all that stuff. But I think ultimately it's just impressive watching a guy being able to create those relationships with that government, and then watching our own government, the government of the country from which he's a citizen in, sometimes actively try to derail him for different reasons.
In all fairness, you have to remember that up to 2016, China was not seen as an adversary. China was seen as, you know, entering the world into the stage of you know, world cooperation. And two things occurred. The one is Xi accumulated power, and the other is Trump came to power. And so Trump saw the danger of China, verbalized it, and implemented very strong, you know, boundaries on that power in the in US trade. Now we all agree with it. But at the time that he implemented that policy, it was thought to be, you know, the world is flat, everybody should trade with each other, blah, 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 blah. The fact that China wasn't following the regulations was kind of overlooked. Yeah, they'll be all right, it'll come along. But it never came along. And so now it's everybody is on board with that particular policy. So that was a big change. But up until that time, it was seen as a good thing. And Elon's work in China was seen that way. And he led the way. I mean, he really blazed a trail by sheer, you know, brilliance, and became the first U.S. car maker to have ownership of their own plant and their own business in China. So he could be a force for, you know, bridging the gaps that we have between us and China, because they are bridgeable. There's no reason we should be enemies. None at all.
I agree. 100%. Yeah. I think it's just such a, it's such an interesting and exciting time as it pertains to that specific piece of getting self-driving approved in China, because it really just, if you've been following the story closely, this has been in the works for 8 years plus. And it finally feels like we are getting somewhere. Like, it's like, okay, now the rubber is meeting the road. There's obvious improvement in the approach. The approach with the vision and the inference compute with the training computer in the mothership, it appears to be the right strategy. It's scalable. It's it will be profitable. And it's something that is uniquely different from everybody else. So you have a unique competitive advantage versus, so you're also moated, right? And it's, so there's so many positive variables to this thing. And it's just a matter of finalizing, it's just executing on the damn technology. You execute on the technology, you win.
Let me just say, there are going to be some further breakthroughs. I don't think we've come to the end of the breakthroughs. It's not done. It's not done.
Of course, it's not done.
I think we have some breakthroughs, and I think they'll be coming. You know, everybody thought we'll have robotaxis by December. I don't think we will. I think it'll be well into next year before we actually have our first unsupervised robotaxi. It could be supervised before then. So I'm not ready to say we're done, but we're done. You can understand the difference. But yeah, and China could well be where we have our first, you know, wide area implementation. I have no doubt it could happen.
Yeah, especially with their willingness to be a lot more open around that regulation, right? They're not nearly as strict as we are, for better or for worse, probably for worse. They're willing to, yeah.
There could be localities where we're freer here.
One of the comments that Frida Dwan, who is an analyst for Altimeter Capital, mentioned that was a surprise for her in her visit, because she did this tour of the different Chinese self-driving efforts. And she noticed that the level of acceptance that the Chinese consumers and the Chinese regulators and the Chinese government had for not as safe technology was much higher than it is here. That they, you know, like, if what had happened to Cruise in San Francisco happened in China, that it would just be another Tuesday and no one would care. And so, you know, that really opens up a freedom to operate that does help to accelerate the development of the technology, which in the long run, you know, I tend to agree with the argument that our inability to stomach the small human costs, yeah, that will be inherent in the risks is actually long-term costing us more human life than just being willing to know that, you know, you do not get the modern airplane without a lot of people who died in the early decades of the era of aviation. And, you know, I think it's going to be similar with regards to self-driving.
Huge number of people in the early days died in the, you know, in the airplanes. I mean, didn't one of the Wright brothers die? I think one of the Wright brothers died. Was it for natural cause? Anyway, you're right. You're right. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt. But when you come across the kind of anti-Musk rhetoric, then you understand that, you know, the first death in an auto drive accident is going to be, you know, on his head, blah, 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 blah. And we know this.
Add another thing to the list of him being a terrible human being. He's literally killing people.
That's right.
Wild stuff. Larry, thank you so much. Where can people find you?
Oh, I'm on X at Tesla Larry.
Also a regular contributor on Herbert's channel as well for people who like the video format.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you having me, and it's been a lot of fun. I love talking, and you let me talk a lot.
We love talking too. You've come to the right place.
Well, definitely appreciate you coming on today, Larry. It's good to be able to pick your brain.
It's great to be able to drill into these things free form without, you know, the structure.
That's why we like to do it that way.
Shout out, Herbert.
Herbert's shows are great. Herbert's shows are great because, you know, he sticks to the point and structure, and it's contained within a certain period of time. So that's great.
Yeah. It's focused. It's a focused delivery. Yeah, I think the reason why we do it this way is because these are like the thought process behind these conversations is like none of us really know where it's going, right? And so for us to figure out where it's going, we need a lot of room to fumble and try to find the right thread to follow. Because, I mean, you know, if you really think of, like, nobody knows what the hell is going on. Even the people that are working on it don't know what's going on. They just know they have to work on it, if you really think about it. Some have better ideas than others. Some have more capital than others. You know, some have maybe a clearer vision than others. But when it comes to the actual execution and the logistics behind getting it there, we still don't know where this is all going or how it's going to impact society truly once it's at the point where every human can have access to it in some way, shape, or form. That's really the, and that's where this conversation is helpful because this is the genesis. Like we're still at ground zero. That's the crazy part of this whole thing. We're probably even before ground zero because we haven't even reached the damn thing. We're just trying to lay out the bones for it, you know?
I'd say we have some clues. I think we are more than clueless. I think we have some clues.
Okay.
So, you know, when I'm talking to you, I've got my notes here in Microsoft Word. I've got some spreadsheets here. I've got, I've got a directory of files that I can refer to.
You're a lot more professional than I am.
How is this not AGI? I mean, so, you know, my brain is, you know, my brain's 78 years old. It's probably full of plaque and is probably dying. But all of the conventional wisdom of all of the wisdom of the day is at my fingertips here to read up. And if I can't remember, I can put it on the screen so I can reference it. You know, so we're already augmented. We became augmented when we first, you know, chipped a hieroglyph into a stone or a symbol into a stone. That symbol in the stone that we could refer to or that we could transmit to somebody else. It's a bit of tough transmission, but we were able to hand it to somebody else. that already raised our intelligence level by that little bit. And with all these things that we have, we've raised our intelligence level just so much. Think about you talking through that microphone, reaching me, me responding back, Hans coming in, and then able to put this out into the world, adding to their confusion and or erudition. So we're already at that point. We're not at ground zero. We have built upon, you know, the shoulders of many, many, many giants. And so I think AGI is that just another step in that direction to superintelligence, because superintelligence is what it's all about. We've achieved a level of superintelligence by all that we've done. You know, crows can use a tool. It's amazing. They can use a tool, a crow, you know, with a brain that is, I have no idea how big its brain is, but I guess it's the veritable pea size. And then that takes us all the way to, you know, an Elon Musk or, you know, an Albert Einstein. So Albert Einstein would be amazed at the world that he found today. And I don't know that he'd be able to use a computer. I mean, I don't know. You know, he may have a level, his level of thinking may be far higher than, and so I don't think we understand what intelligence means yet. And so I don't understand what AIG means, and I don't understand what superintelligence means. All I know is that it's going to be interesting and helpful in the extreme.